another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. A quick reminder that I'll be in San Francisco next week for the upcoming OSBC, which is the Open Source Business Conference. Now, LQ has been a sponsor of the OSBC for a few years now, but this is the first one I'll get to attend, and I am looking forward to it. If you'll be attending and would like to connect, please do contact me. In last week's podcast, I announced that you can save a full 20% on all crossover products and support LQ in the process. The response to this so far has been much greater than I had anticipated, so I did want to mention it again, and the link for ordering information is in the show notes for last week's podcast. Now, on to the news. The first story I have is Microsoft takes on the free world. Some thought it was inevitable, and others actually thought it would never happen, but here it is from a recent Fortune article. Quote, "Free software is great, and corporate America loves it. It's often high-quality stuff that can be downloaded free off the internet and then copied at will. It's versatile. It can be customized to perform almost any large-scale computing task. And it's blessedly crash-resistant. A broad community of developers, from individuals to large companies like IBM, is constantly working to improve it and introduce new features. No wonder the business world has embraced it so enthusiastically. More than half the companies in the Fortune 500 are thought to be using the free operating system Linux in their data centers. But now, there's a shadow hanging over Linux and other free software, and it's being cast by Microsoft. The Redmond behemoth asserts that one reason free software is of such high quality is that it violates more than 200 of Microsoft's patents. And as a mature company facing unfavorable market trends and fearsome competitors like Google, Microsoft is pulling no punches. It wants royalties. If the company gets its way, free software won't be free anymore." The conflict pits Microsoft and its dog CEO, Steve Ballmer, against the free world, people who believe software is pure knowledge. The leader of that faction is Richard Matthew Stallman, a computer visionary with the look and the intransigence of the Old Testament prophet. End quote. And then further down in the article actually comes the details. Quote, "Microsoft counters that it is a matter of principle. We live in a world where we honor and support the honoring of intellectual property," says Ballmer in an interview. "FOSS patrons are going to have to play by the same rules as the rest of the business," he insists. "What's fair is fair." Microsoft General Counsel Brad Smith and Licensing Chief Horacio Gutierrez sat down with Fortune recently to map out their strategy for getting FOSS users to pay royalties. Revealing the precise figure for the first time, they state that FOSS infringes on no fewer than 235 Microsoft patents. End quote. Now that 235 number is fairly close to the previously given and is, as you recall, disputed from the source, 228 patents. While the lengthy Fortune article does get a few minor details wrong, it's a very good way to get up to speed on the situation if it's one that you haven't really been following. And there are a lot of details in it. Onto why Microsoft chose to do this now, there's just a myriad of reasons. Potential rumors could be that they think that the GPL version 3 has teeth, and they're trying to get this out ahead of its release. I know I've seen at least one Microsoft person say that the GPL 3 is trying to tear down a bridge that the Novell Microsoft patent agreement had built up. This would seem to be bombing any bridges that were ever there. But it also could be that they've not been able to, as effectively as they thought, battle open source and Linux more directly. Most likely, it's probably a combination of a lot of different reasons. The recent Dell announcement that they would support Linux also could have something to do with it. Regardless of the reason, I agree with Larry when he says, quote, "If Microsoft believes that free and open source software violates any of their patents, let them put those patents forward now, in the light of day, where we can all evaluate them on their merits. If not, then stop trying to bully customers into paying royalties to use open source. It's time for Microsoft to put up or shut up." End quote. And it really appears here that the battle lines are being drawn and the Cold War of software patents may be coming to an end. Now, to be sure, the players involved here are absolutely mammoth, and the amount of money at stake is nothing short of astronomical. If you look at who has the most to lose, I'd contend that that's Microsoft. But how things will play out still remain to be seen. Obviously, everyone's watching this very closely. and one really has to wonder how Novell feels about their recent patent deal right now. I know they have put out a statement saying that they do not agree with what Microsoft is doing and that the patent deal was not an indication by them that they thought patents were being violated. As was expected, nearly everyone is commenting on this Fortune article and really just about patents in Microsoft in general. Even Linus has weighed in saying the following, quote, "It's certainly a lot more likely that Microsoft violates patents than Linux does," said Torvalds, holder of the Linux trademark. "If the source code for Windows could be subjected to the same critical review that Linux has been, Microsoft would find itself in violation of patents held by other companies." Basic operating system theory was pretty much done by the end of the 1960s. IBM probably owned thousands of really fundamental patents, Torvalds said in a response to questions submitted by Information Week. But he doesn't like any form of patent saber-rattling. The fundamental stuff was done about a half century ago and has long, long since lost any patent protection, he wrote. So, the whole, "we have a list and we're not telling you," itself should tell you something, Torvalds said of Microsoft's stance in the Fortune story. And for good measure, he added, "don't you think that if Microsoft actually had some really foolproof patent, they'd just tell us and go, nah, nah, nah," end quote. And you always have to love Linus's commentary. Now, there's, to be honest, so much good commentary on this that it's just really not possible to cover all of them. I would like to just cover a few. The OIN, which has a bunch of members from Red Hat and Oracle and many people that participate in open source, posted a press release that contains some facts to provide clarity around Linux and patents. And it also points out that in less than a year, the OIN has accumulated more than 100 strategic worldwide patents. And those patents span web and internet, e-commerce, mobile, communications, a whole variety of different things. And these patents are available to all as part of the free Linux ecosystem that OIN is creating around. And a quote from them was, "We stand ready to leverage our IP portfolio to maintain the open patent environment OIN has helped create," end quote. Sun CEO Jonathan Schwartz has an extremely apropos summary of what Sun did when faced with adversity and really pressures in their market. It's a really good post. You should head over and read the whole thing. I'm just going to cover a small bit here. Quote, "So what's my view on the interview in Fortune, in which one of Sun's business partners claims that the open source community is trampling their patent portfolio? You'd be wise to listen to your customers. You're threatening to sue. They can leave you, especially if you give them motivation. Remember, they wouldn't be motivated unless your products were somehow missing the mark. All of which is to say, no amount of fear can stop the rise of free media or free software. They are the same after all. The community is vastly more innovative and powerful than a single company. And you will never turn back the clock on elementary school students and developing economies and aid agencies and fledgling universities or the Fortune 500 that have found value in the wisdom of the open source community. Open standards and open source software are literally changing the face of the planet, creating opportunity wherever the network can reach. That's not a genie any litigator I know can put back in a bottle," end quote. Now there is one recurring theme I think you'll see in a lot of the commentary, and that this action is fairly definitive proof that Microsoft sees clear and imminent danger here. They probably for the first time in a long time, see something they can't kill and can't even potentially kill. There's just no chance. And it's starting to show that they don't know exactly what to do next. Now, Stephen Wally, a former Microsoftie through acquisition, has the following to say. Quote, "Microsoft needs to get back in the business of building exceptional solutions to customer problems instead of chasing a 1990s dream of IBM's secondary revenues from hardware patent licensing, or worse yet, threatening those same customers. Disclaimer, Microsoft is a client, but I swear I'm reconsidering that decision. It's unclear to me that the mortgage payment is worth this much aggravation," end quote. So as I said earlier, what Microsoft will do in the end remains to be seen. It seems that the current near-universal consensus is that they won't actually sue anyone, but will continue to try to squeeze money out of those willing to pay or to partner while really figuring out their larger strategic move while they're getting that money. That can potentially have some unintended consequences, though. I've heard Don Mardy say many, many times that much of the software industry is really just a recruiting contest, and you need look no further than Google, really, for some good proof of this. The really smart engineers, though, like to build cool software, not win by or really even have to deal with litigation. Now, to be sure, Microsoft has a lot of money to throw at the problem, but with a fairly stagnant stock price recently and plenty of companies doing really interesting things, I don't think money is going to be enough to keep the very best for much longer. The long-term implications of that should not be underestimated. And of course, neither should the disruptive force of open source. We'll have to see if either of those lessons are learned. The next story I have is cautiously optimistic. And here's something you just don't see every day. A lawyer from a large enterprise company, in this case Sun, talking publicly about pending litigation and sounding both reasonable and very human in the process. So the topic, and this relates to the story I just covered, is patent troll cases. Two of them in this case, both ludicrous from the looks of it. But he says there is hope. It was a good post. It's on the Sun blogs. I would recommend you read the whole thing. I'm going to just pull out two brief snippets. Quote, "You may believe that these are isolated examples. However, during the same time Sun was sued in these two cases, 8 mobile phone companies, 4 major internet retailers, and 3 computer companies were all sued for infringement by patent holding companies. If this sounds like a waste of time, money, and resources, it is. But there have been some recent changes, both legislative and judicial, that make me feel at least a slight bit optimistic for a change. On April 18th this year, a bipartisan and bicameral bill was introduced in Congress entitled the Patent Reform Act of 2007. Recently, the United States Supreme Court also announced 2 important decisions that provide more immediate relief. In Microsoft versus AT&T Corp., the court ruled 7-1 that Golden Masters shipped by Microsoft for installation on computers made and sold abroad are not components pursuant to 35 U.S.C. Section 27(1)(f). Under U.S. patent law, no infringement occurs when a product that is a subject of a U.S. patent is made or sold in another country. It may be an infringement of a foreign patent, but U.S. patent laws do not apply. The exception is Section 27(1)(f), which was enacted in 1984 in response to a case involving, of all things, shrimp deveining equipment. The defendant in that case conceded that it was prohibitive for making or selling the infringing equipment in the U.S., but successfully argued that there was nothing in the law that prevented it from making the components for the equipment in the U.S. and then having it assembled abroad." End quote. And the next snippet, quote, "In the current case, Microsoft conceded that it infringed AT&T's patents related to digital speech compression, but they objected to AT&T's claim that a Golden Master should be considered a component under 271F and Microsoft, accordingly, liable for foreign damages. In siding with Microsoft's position, the court has brought some rationality into the world of software patents. Indeed, many in the software industry have been watching this case closely and considering whether, assuming the original decision was unchanged, it would be a reason for moving development efforts offshore." End quote. Now, it seems ironic to me that it was a Microsoft assertion that's brought some rationality into the world of software patents, but there you have it, directly from a lawyer. Here's hope that the pendulum may be swinging back to a more reasonable landscape where real innovation is protected and encouraged while litigious bastards, patent trolls, and asininely obvious innovations are seen as such. At this point, I'll take slight optimism. It's a start. The next story I have is migrating to Ubuntu Linux from Microsoft Windows. And it's a great reminder that we are, in fact, making real progress when you see stories like this. Quote, "4 years ago, I tried about a dozen Linux distributions to see if they were ready for an ordinary user to install as an escape from the Windows world. None of the distros performed well enough for me to recommend them to a non-geek unless they were going to hire someone to install it. After hearing Dell's recent announcement that it will sell computers with pre-installed Ubuntu Linux, I decided to see if Ubuntu was user-friendly." End quote. Now, the first thing I'd like to point out here is almost no computer users actually install Windows either. I still maintain that the installation process is not really something that's a good indicator of usefulness of an operating system. But her experience overall now, I think, is important, and here's what she has to say. Quote, conclusion. I think Ubuntu Linux is definitely ready for almost anyone with a Windows system who is tired of having their computer infested with spyware and viruses. It is also a way to avoid Microsoft's activation demands. It's free, it's good, and it works. I will continue to use Windows for writing because OpenOffice.org does not have a feature I need. OpenOffice developers, remember my enhancement request from 2000 or 2001 asking for an outline feature? The feature with more votes than any other feature request? Yes, that one. Your unwillingness or inability to give OpenOffice.org an outline view that works just like Microsoft Word is all that is keeping me from turning my Microsoft Windows partition into blank Oxide. End quote. So from a usability perspective, you heard that right. Her only showstopper was the lack of an outline view in OO Writer. And to be fair, that's not even directly Linux related, and that's not to say that it isn't important. But remember, Windows doesn't even come with a word processor, so not exactly a direct comparison there. So congratulations to Ubuntu here. Like I said, always a good thing to get a reminder that we really are making definitive progress. And the last story I have is Dell announces the models for Ubuntu. And I just got the following email forwarded to me by a Dell employee. Quote, we will be launching a Linux-based OS, Ubuntu, on the E520, the 1505, and the XPS 410, starting next Thursday, 524. We expect these systems to be less than 1% of our OS mix for the entire year, which is about 20,000 systems annually. Please cover the huddle deck below with your teams by EOB Sunday. If any questions come up, please let me know so I can address them before launch. The goal of launching Linux is to continue to give our customers more choices to customize their new Dell. Providing more options to our Linux enthusiast customer group will hopefully create even more raving fans. End quote. It was also noted that people within Dell can now officially start discussing the desktop Linux situation with customers, which I guess wasn't their official stance previously. Now, it's great to see that this initiative, which was previously announced, is being followed up on so quickly. You know, some were thinking that Dell was announcing this to get press and then might not follow through or might not follow through for a while. So fantastic to see. I was hoping for a bit more than just three models, but really, more than the number of models, what's important to me right now is how those three models actually get rolled out. The long-term implications for Linux on the desktop in the mainstream here, I think, are huge. If this doesn't go well, it could have very bad implications. But kudos to Dell for finally making the leap. With less than 1% of sales at stake here, though, it's possible Dell doesn't have or doesn't perceive the incentive to put a huge effort behind this. I think when you look at where these things are going, them getting an early foothold could have very good implications on the revenue side and profit side, and also the churn side, which is always important in low-margin, high-volume businesses. So I'll be keeping a very close eye on the rollout and will certainly be updating the podcast as things come out. The podcast next week should come out after their announcement, so I'll hopefully be able to cover that. And I would like to thank the Dell employee who forwarded that to me. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.